Welcome to Rhode Island's Amazing Women. I'm Deborah Giro. Thank you for listening to the podcast and the radio show. And if you're listening at home, consider yourself so lucky to have a place to live, affordable housing. So who's building affordable housing and where is it? It's such a perennial policy issue in every state. My guest today is Jennifer Hawkins, the CEO of One Neighborhood Builders. She's also worked at the Rhode Island Coalition for the Homeless, Madison Park Development in Roxbury, Mass., and Breaking Ground in New York City. She spent two decades in nonprofit community and housing development in San Francisco, Boston, New York. And I guess if you can solve the problems there, you can solve them anywhere, Jennifer. So welcome and thank you for taking the time to talk affordable housing with us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to join this conversation.
So for listeners who may be unfamiliar with One Neighborhood Builders, explain your mission and what it is that you do.
So One Neighborhood Builders is based in Providence, Rhode Island, but we actually work across the entire state to develop affordable housing and to develop health equity and economic mobility in coordination with community organizations. So we actually have three strategies. So first, obviously, is to develop affordable housing. Secondly, we are the backbone for a collective impact initiative right here in Providence. It's called Central Providence Opportunities. And it's bringing together a constellation of organizations who care deeply around health equity and economic mobility. Mm-hmm. And then the third strategy is using our experience and our knowledge in those areas to effectuate systems change and policy change. Mm-hmm. So those are the three strategies that we're deploying to achieve our mission.
And I want to get into some of the projects that you're working on, but it seems to me these projects take years to break ground, years to complete. You know, what factors contribute to this, Jen?
It sure does. Yeah. I mean, affordable housing is, you know, it's certainly, I would say, harder than market rate housing. There is nothing affordable about the development of affordable housing, right? It actually is an incredibly expensive pursuit. And so the chief reason it takes so long is for the lack of capital. Mm-hmm. You know, to construct a affordable home, let's just say it's $400,000 to build a three-bedroom, one-bath home. But that same home, if you want to have it actually affordable to a low-income buyer, you have to subsidize that. They can't afford $400,000. And so the subsidy that you need in order to bridge the gap between how much it costs and how much a low-income buyer can afford is the subsidy that is incredibly scarce, is incredibly oversubscribed. And mm-hmm. so cobbling together what we refer to as the capital stack really contributes to the long timeline. So I would say the lack of adequate amount of capital is the chief barrier. But a second barrier is the zoning challenges. You know, I just gave an example of a single family home, but most of the work that One Neighborhood Builders does is multifamily rental apartment communities. And those projects, most of the land in Rhode Island is not zoned for those projects. Most of the land in Rhode Island is not zoned by right multifamily. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that we have to go in front of the zoning boards and the municipalities and ask for a reprieve from their zoning rules so that we are allowed to build a multifamily development project. Mm-hmm. And that can take a very, very long time and is you know, not generally successful. There's mm-hmm. often times where we are prohibited from going forward.
I've been reading a lot over the past several years about a model for social housing that Montgomery County in Maryland created. It's kind of a mixed income where the state of Maryland acts as the public developer, owns the land, contracts with a developer, you know, to build the housing. There's a third party that handles operations and management. And they've created a revolving fund with about $100 million in the fund in Maryland. And they build about 1,500 mixed income affordable units every 4 years. And you mentioned the capital. And the attraction is that, you know, they're not relying on the private sector to create more housing units. Montgomery County in Maryland, you know, is about the size of the entire state of Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that? And what's the likelihood that policymakers in Rhode Island will adopt something like that?
I applaud looking outside the Rhode Island boundaries for solutions. I applaud the idea of thinking creatively. And I do think that the public sector absolutely has a role in being proactive developers. I question the ability for the quote unquote Montgomery model to be viable in Rhode Island. The reason that I am, I guess I question that is that in Rhode Island, the market rate portion of the housing, the rents that you can get for that quote unquote market rate is much lower than that in Montgomery County. Outside of sort of high rent areas and in potentially Newport and the Jewelry District of Providence and some other sort of key communities, most of the rents in Rhode Island, despite the fact that we're seeing huge increases and it's really pricing out most of our households, they're still a lot lower than in high rent markets like Montgomery County. And so the high rent portion of those developments cross-subsidize the affordable units. And I don't think that the math will necessarily work here in Rhode Island.
What are the rents? So I've seen everything from $1,700 to $1,900 a month to rent. I mean, that seems pretty high. And even though you're right, I mean, obviously the rents could be higher outside of Washington, D.C., in Montgomery County, you know, it's still relative that they're building 1,400 units a year of mixed income. So the fact that you'd have more housing stock, wouldn't that be a benefit to Rhode Island?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It would be great. And the reason, so in one example in Montgomery County, it's 75% of the units are market rate and 25% are affordable. And those market rate units are charging, you know, $3,000, $3,500 a month. Mm-hmm. And that very significant rent allows the cross subsidy of the affordable units and allows you to pay back that revolving loan fund. In Rhode Island, I don't believe you would be able to get that level of rents for the market rate units. And so you would still be able need to have an additional subsidy to make that work. So I just don't, I'm not quite sure that that same model will work here. I think there would have to be some tweaks to it. But what? I do agree in general that we need abundant housing for all. We right. need more housing for everyone, for all up and down the income spectrum and all sorts of different typologies, shared housing, home ownership, rental housing, assisted living, you name it, we need it.
Mm-hmm. And many of my colleagues in the legislature, I know, care deeply about the affordable housing policy issue, you know, including Speaker Shikarchi, who's sort of made this a priority. And the issue has really percolated to the top. What efforts and policies have elected officials done in recent years? And what do you think we need to do to go forward?
Yeah, I think Speaker Shikarchi's leadership in the issue has been fantastic. It's really a breath of fresh air, the fact that he has prioritized this and has made, you know, has fulfilled the promises that he's made to move forward his housing packages. So I do think that we have made great strides in the creation of the Department of Housing, of having a Secretary of Housing that is, you know, wakes up every day and thinks exclusively about mm-hmm. these issues, I think is a really important move in the right direction. The fact that we now have a dedicated funding source through the conveyance tax that actually happened under Governor Raimondo's administration. But, you know, for the first time, the state of Rhode Island has a dedicated state source of money for affordable housing.
Yeah. And it's important. You know, you need to have buy-in from everyone in order to actually see policies change. The two most cost burdened demographics, you know, are the millennials and our seniors who are on a fixed income, and so many young people who are, you know, saddled with college debt, moving back in with their parents, right? Paying $1,500, $1,700, $1,800 a month. And there's just no way they could even ever save enough money to buy a home. So we need more affordable housing. The question is, how do we get it? You know, what do we do in the future?
Yeah. So, you know, I will be speaking at a commission on Monday, actually, with regards to state and municipal owned land. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a real opportunity to identify former schools, former churches, where One Neighborhood Builders is adaptively reusing a church in Cumberland for housing, that there's land and projects available that I think could be repurposed into housing. I think there's a lot of considerations around how we maybe convert offices into housing. Mm-hmm. But all of this really does take the challenge of how do we have progressive zoning rules that allows for that to happen and adequate capital to really bridge the gap between how much it costs and how much someone can afford to either pay a mortgage or rent.
Good points. Thank you for listening and thanks for being here. I'm Deb Ruggiero, host and creator of this award-winning radio show and podcast, highlighting Rhode Island's amazing women. You can listen anytime on Apple, Google, Spotify, all your favorite streaming services. And of course, the website, amazingwomenri.com. And Karen Kay is our producer. I've been chatting with Jennifer Hawkins, the CEO of One Neighborhood Builders, nonprofit that started back in 1988 to develop affordable housing. Jen, you mentioned the St. Patrick's Church in Cumberland, where you're making 44 housing units. Tell us about that project and what other types of properties that you buy and the process in the community to actually start building affordable housing.
Sure. Yeah. So the church is a great project. The mayor and Mayor Mutter and the planning team at the town of Cumberland have worked really collaboratively with us. They wanted to see the church adapted into housing. And so we, from day one, have worked together hand in glove to make that possible. And I cannot stress more how important it is for developers to work collaboratively with municipalities around a project. When there's a shared vision, a shared outcome, it just makes it glide past so much easier. Mm-hmm. And so that we are going to be converting the church into 20 apartments. And then around the land, there's a rectory that we're also redeveloping, and then some also the lot, we're going to be building some new townhomes. So for a total, as you said, of 44 new apartments. So that started, about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It came to our attention, and we hope to have it complete in 2 years. So the idea, from idea to, as they say, heads and beds, will be, yes, about 4 years in duration. It is, wow, exceptionally long period of time, but that's unfortunately typical for us. Mm-hmm. We have another project that we are hoping to also break ground on in the coming year, and that is called Center City Apartments. And this is going to be our largest development project to date. It'll be 144 apartments in East Providence. It's on Taunton Avenue. It's a transit-oriented development. It's literally right in front of a bus stop.
Perfect.
And the project is, for us, really important because we're doing it in collaboration with three other organizations, also all CEOs who are female. It's Crossroads Rhode Island, Foster Forward, mm-hmm, and Family Service of Rhode Island. The leaders of those organizations are friends, yeah, and colleagues, and all working together to bring this project to fruition will be a dream come true for me.
Karen Santilli of Crossroads has joined me on the show, and she's talked about that as well. And she's given shout outs to you as well as many of those other leaders in those social service agencies. So, I'm familiar with Church Community Housing Corporation, sure, and that started back in Newport County. Oh my gosh, like back in 1969, just a group of people getting together to discuss the lack of affordable, decent housing in Newport County. How is One Neighborhood Builders different from Church Community Housing?
Well, we are, I would say, I'll start with how we're similar.
Okay.
Like Church, we're also a community development corporation. And like Church, we started very hyper-local of residents and neighbors, you know, coming together to say, there is blight in this area. There's disinvestment in this area. And how can we kind of change the destiny but have it a community-informed destiny for this neighborhood? I would say that the difference lies in the fact that One Neighborhood Builders has really leaned in to the three strategies. We both develop affordable housing, but in addition to that, we are serving as the backbone for this place-based collective impact initiative. And that is very important to us to convene organizations around a shared purpose of health equity and economic mobility. And then that third strategy of really trying to influence systems in the discourse of being what we like to say, an outspoken implementer. So those are the nuances of how we approach the work.
Well, there's just no doubt, you know, there's such an overwhelming need for affordable housing, not only in this state, but everywhere. And you mentioned earlier, Jen, you know, some of the barriers, you know, but I know going before a zoning board is not easy, but how much NIMBYism do you encounter when you go before those local councils? And, you know, how does that sort of kneecap some of the work you try to do?
Yeah, it is tough. For a few years, I recently stepped off the Smithfield Planning Board. And so I have a great deal of respect and understanding from those sitting across the table who are really looking at how will my sewer system and my school enrollment and my emergency services, et cetera, be impacted by this development. And they have real legitimate concerns around how a municipality's infrastructure is going to be impacted. And so I think that we have a responsibility to listen to those concerns and to work with the Department of Housing and other state entities to bring the resources to the municipalities they need so that they can say, yes, we want this here. Of course, there are, I think, some, I would say, less credible concerns that are voiced around, you know, not a fear of what a community of people who have experienced homelessness may represent. But I think that is just a matter of not having familiarity and recognizing that they are neighbors just like everybody else and really deserve high quality, safe, stable housing like everybody else. And that when provided with that, are able to live in harmony with their neighbors. And that is well documented. They just need that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I'm chatting with Jen Hawkins. She's the CEO of One Neighborhood Builders. I'm Deb Ruggiero. Karen Kay is our producer of the radio show and podcast, Amazing Women. You can listen anytime at amazingwomenri.com. I think the elephant in the room, Jen, when it comes to affordable housing are in some ways the short-term rentals that have exploded in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, without any local restrictions, many people were buying up single family homes, you know, starting to run a short-term rental business, if you will, and taking housing stock off the market for those year-round renters like working families. How much, in your opinion, has the short-term rental phenomenon kind of impacted the affordable housing in our state?
Yeah, I think it absolutely has. And, you know, when services such as Airbnb launched number of years ago, it was, you know, hey, I've got a spare bedroom in my home I could make some extra money. And I think that as it has been corporatized, that it has moved from that kind of founding idea to, as you say, businesses, you know, who own 100 Airbnb properties. And this is, there's no time that it's ever occupied by an owner. It is exclusively for short-term rental.
And they're not paying corporate taxes. They're paying residential property taxes, right?
Yes. Yes. And so I think that it is an area that really does need to be regulated. And it is, an area that I think there is a sea of difference between, a corporation owning dozens of properties and, a mom and pop trying to make some extra money by leasing out their room that now their kids in college and they want to make some extra money on, Labor Day weekend. Yeah. So I don't think we should throw the baby out of the bathwater. There's a way of nuancing this. But I do think that it is a concern that we need to reckon with.
And you're right. It did start back in 2008 in San Francisco with, an owner occupied house and you rent out a room kind of, defray some of the property taxes that you have to pay. And there are some cities, I think Boston at one time limited the number of short-term rentals to like 700 units, almost like a liquor license, right? So you don't have a proliferation, which was kind of interesting. So you spent over 20 years in affordable housing. How'd you even get interested in this work?
I sort of fell into it, I suppose. I am a native Rhode Islander. I grew up in Warwick, and then my family moved to Seekonk. And when I was in high school, we had an opportunity to do a day of volunteerism. And I actually worked at Amos House. And I just remember being exposed to the scourge of homelessness and feeling sort of deeply moved by that inequity. And then when I graduated from college, I was a VISTA volunteer in San Francisco, as a matter of fact, and volunteered with the San Francisco Housing Authority, or that's where my VISTA placement was, and really started to understand public housing so just sort of by happenstance and, pursuit of my interest, really in the social justice element of housing really tickled me. And then I, received my graduate degree in public administration and learned about more the nuts and bolts of real estate finance. But it's been an interesting journey. And I wish that more people would pursue this line of work.
I've never heard anyone say affordable housing has tickled me. So that's that's funny. Yeah. So talk in the final minutes or so that we have, I'd like to know the top three projects that One Neighborhood Builders, is working on that you think are going to make a difference, creating more affordable housing in the state of Rhode Island, say, in the next 4 to 5 years.
Certainly top of my list, number one would be Center City Apartments, the 144 units of which 40% of those apartments will be for extremely low income households. So really helping those who need it the most. Yep. The second project I would say would be St. Patrick's Church in Cumberland. And then the third project is Broad Street Homes in Central Falls. We're really excited to be developing a project at scale in Central Falls.
Well, you have done tremendous work, Jen Hawkins. Thank you so much. There's a lot of work ahead of you, and we're grateful for One Neighborhood Builders and all that you're doing to increase the affordable housing stock here in the state of Rhode Island. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I end each show with a quote, and this one is one of my favorites from anthropologist Margaret Mead. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. I'm Deborah Giro. You can hear more podcasts at the website. And of course, you can stream on all of your favorite streaming services for the podcasts. The website is amazingwomenri.com. Thanks so much for listening. Stay well.